Well, that's another very, very good answer and very heartfelt. So we'll follow it with a very easy question, which is, who is a better podcast host, me or Kristen?
This is Infrastructure Junkies.
Welcome, Infrastructure Junkies, to your show. This is a podcast created by right-of-way professionals for right-of-way professionals. The Infrastructure Junkies podcast is the voice of the right-of-way industry, exploring eminent domain, right-of-way acquisition, and infrastructure development.
Infrastructure Junkies, it's the end of an era in our industry. I'm Dave Arnold.
And I'm Kristen Short.
By now, most of you have heard about my first foray into podcasting. It was via the Eminent Domain podcast. I had seen this app on my iPhone, and it was a different color, and it had a different logo on it. I didn't know what it was, and I didn't know what a podcast was, so I Googled it. I thought, this thing seems weird. What is this thing where people talk and they push it out and other people listen? Who really wants to listen to these things? And sometimes I still wonder that. Now, the next thing I did is I figured, well, if I'm going to listen to a podcast, I better think of a topic that interests me. And you guessed it, I found a podcast on eminent domain. In fact, it was called the Eminent Domain Podcast, and I listened to the very first episode of the Eminent Domain Podcast as my first episode I'd ever heard in my life. The podcast was hosted by a Texas attorney who would one day become my friend. His name is Clint Schumacher.
As a fellow Texan, I've known Clint for a long time. We've worked together in multiple cases where Clint would be representing a landowner and I might be assisting on the relocation on behalf of the condemning authority. I'd also heard him speak in multiple events for IRWA and other things. And I had also stumbled upon Clint's podcast years ago. And I will say it has been a very valuable resource for me and I think for a lot of people in our industry.
So in early 2020, just after COVID had joined us, Kristen and I began working on the concept, which ultimately became Infrastructure Junkies, and we worked through that for a number of months. We launched what was then called the Pendulum Land Podcast, which was designed to support a new right-of-way company that we had co-founded called Pendulum Land Services. You guessed it. We published an episode, and something weird happened. Clint Schumacher invited us on his show. He didn't view us as competitors, but rather he welcomed us with open arms to the podcast community, and we went on to collaborate with Clint on several very successful joint episodes.
Let me tell you a little bit about Clint. Clint Schumacher is the host of the Eminent Domain Podcast, which can be found on iTunes and pretty much any platform where you'll find your podcasts. Additionally, Clint is a popular speaker on the topic of eminent domain. He is often called upon to speak on the subject to industry professionals, other lawyers, and law students around the industry and around the country. Clint has represented property owners of all sizes that are being impacted by public projects. Over the last 20 years, Clint has developed a particular expertise in condemnation for highway projects. He is able both to work with condemning authority to try minimize impacts and, when that fails, seek full compensation for the owner. Clint is with Dawson and Sod right here in the great state of Texas, and we are happy to welcome him to the show.
Welcome, Clint.
Hi, Clint.
Well, thank you guys, Dave, Kristen. Thank you guys. I appreciate you asking me to be on the show. It's a great pleasure and honor to do that, and I'm looking forward to our conversation.
This is fantastic. We really appreciate you making time for us. Now, let's just get right down to it. The Eminent Domain Podcast had become a bit of an icon in our right-of-way industry. Clint, 128 episodes. And to put that into perspective, we've been doing this now 4.5 seasons. We're in our 5th season, and this will only be our 79th episode. And you've published 128 over the course of 6 years. Then on March 18th, we got a notification that you were publishing your farewell episode. I'll tell you, I was shocked.
Same.
Yeah. So what made you decide to shut it down?
Oh, well, you're very kind in the way you speak about it. You probably overstate the being an icon in the industry.
But I do not.
Well, you're very nice. It had run its course. I feel a great amount of pride and satisfaction about getting to share this with so many people and amazing conversations that I had with people that came on as guests on the show. But my word of the year in 2023 was the word less. And during the year, I really focused on ways to simplify life and declutter life. And one of the last things I gave up was the podcast. And, I published it for all of 2023, and I really didn't want to turn it loose, but I decided there were other ways I wanted to spend that time. And as you guys know, I mean, it can be very time consuming. And I've had a great amount of help in putting it together, but it's still a burden on your time every week, every month as you're putting the episodes out. And I just decided I wanted to spend that time doing other things.
Well, Clint, I recall, and I think it was in 2021, it was either late 2020 or early 2021, you published a book. I think it was called Second Wind. Kristen and I both read it. And so you're a published author. I believe you're a football coach. I believe you're a family man. I believe you are involved in your church. So when you came up with this idea of less, what else didn't make the cut? I presume you got your family still.
The family has stuck around, thankfully. And at times my wife's a very patient woman, so she's been a saint. That's part of it, honestly. I mean, there's time I want to reallocate to my family. I'm actually coaching one more season of football, and then I'm going to be done in December. And we're going to reallocate that time to other things. I'm not completely sure what all things those are going to be yet. But yeah, I'm trying to figure out what the Lord has in store for me in this next chapter of life.
Well, how about your legal career? You're a successful eminent domain attorney and have been for a long time. I think you and I are kind of in part of the same generation, and the thought of retirement or slowing down does cross my mind. I'm certainly not going to do it as long as this whole EJIA thing is cranking. But what are you thinking about your career, or do you want to share?
No, happy to share. Actually, that's a conversation that my wife, Jennifer, and I have all the time. Dave, I absolutely love what I do. And I know from talking to you that you have a similar passion for it. I can't see myself, at least where I'm at right now, walking away from the career. As we get older and we see more situations and we become wiser, I think we have just more and more value that we deliver to our clients. And I still have the energy and the passion for it. And so I don't have any current vision of myself retiring. Maybe that'll change at some point in the future, but it's not right now. I love doing what I'm doing. And as you guys know, I mean, to me, this is the kind of the golden era of being an eminent domain lawyer, at least in Texas. That's what I know best. And it may be that way in other parts of the country. But gosh, we're as busy as we've ever been with really significant, important projects. And the work that we're getting to do is enormously exciting, and I'm having a lot of fun doing it. One thing that I have become more passionate about in the last few years is really the art of trying lawsuits, and I've spent more time learning how to do that. And I think that part of giving up the podcast is being able to do something in that realm as well. I'm still kind of putting together the framework or the blueprint of what that might be. But in terms of walking away from the career, I'm not there yet. I'm having too much fun, honestly.
I couldn't agree more. And you know, Clint, you're probably at the same point in your career where I am, where I'm blessed that I don't have to do work that I don't want to do. I don't have to take cases I don't want to take or clients. Or if there's part of a case that somebody else can handle, I don't have to do it. And I could not agree more with you about this being the golden era. I don't think I've been in this industry as long as you have, the eminent domain industry. I've been doing it probably 18 years, and I think you've been doing it a little while longer. But I've never seen it like this.
Yeah. Yeah. So, it's a good time.
It is a good time. It is a good time. Well, I have a question for you, because I don't think I've ever asked you this before, and I'm not really sure. How and why did you start the podcast? How did you conceive of the Eminent Domain Podcast? Because you, as far as I know, are the first of your kind to put out a podcast anywhere close to the topics that we cover. What made you decide to do that?
Sure. It was kind of in a period of reflection, probably not unlike what happened last year. And so somewhere around 2016, I was at a pivot point in my career. I had always done eminent domain from my very first year as a lawyer, but it was never all that I did. But as I got into 2016, I was evaluating, what do I want the second part of my career to look like? And I did a number of commercial types of cases as well. And I just got to where I decided I really liked the eminent domain work. In my other cases, we would have literally a million plus pages of documents, and you'd spend the first several months of a case just bringing boxes home to go through your client's documents, and you would be stuck in endless discovery battles. But in the eminent domain cases, you got to have courtroom experiences, deposition experiences, you know, in Texas, we call them special commissioner hearing experiences, all of which, you know, really got me going. It got my juices going. And I really enjoyed doing that kind of work. And it's such a niche practice that if you know it and you know the cases and you know the law, a very small percentage of people can be of the greatest value to a client that has that kind of problem. And so around 2016, I decided I wanted to pivot my practice and lessen the other type of work I was doing and increase the amount of eminent domain work that I was doing. And figured at that point, I would love to figure out a way to differentiate myself in the marketplace and to be of some value to the other people that were doing it. And I had started listening to podcasts, probably not unlike Dave's story. And there were a number of podcasts that I listened to. And I looked around to figure out if there was an eminent domain podcast, and there wasn't. And I thought, heck, I'll try that. And so one, I had to learn how to do it. And so, you know, you kind of go through, I went through, and it's a lot easier now, quite candidly, than it was then. And so I had to learn a lot of technology that I didn't know. And then I sat down one day and I tried to come up with, what shows can I do? And so I came up with 10 ideas, which I thought was incredible that I could get that many. And I figured half of those people would say no. And so I figured I've got 5 shows. And if I can do 5 shows, maybe that'll be the end of it, because who knows if anyone's going to listen to this crazy thing anyway. And sure enough, we got the 5 shows in. And maybe, as you guys have found out, people tell you yes a lot more, a whole lot more than they tell you no. And so those ideas just kind of continue to grow. If you had asked me when I started, if I'd ever done more than 10 or 12 episodes, I'd probably say that was unlikely to have happened. But it just kept going, and people were very supportive. You guys have a common friend in Robert Thomas. And Robert was actually the first guest in episode number 1. And it was fitting. He was the last guest in episode 127. And he was a great friend to the podcast and gave me a number of different ideas and introduced me to a number of people that ended up being guests on the show. And so his patronage really helped facilitate it. And I can't overstate the importance of his friendship and his support of the podcast as it rolled on.
Well, he's been tremendously supportive of our show as well. I think we can call Robert Thomas the godfather of domain-related podcasts. How about
that?
Well, one of the first episodes that I listened to of yours was one where you had my friend and yours, Lisa Harrison, on, and she talked about relocation.
Yeah.
And I have to tell you, I remember listening to that and being like, oh my gosh, Lisa is so brave, like to just get on there and like answer any questions. Like that would make me so nervous. And now we get on these microphones all the time and it's, you know, it's so much fun. But when you're talking about starting the podcast and like, oh, I'm going to have a podcast, then you got to do a podcast. And I thought before we had a podcast that people that had a podcast picked up a microphone, pushed record, and then pushed a button. I had no idea what goes into it. I mean, from the planning to the editing to the publish all, I mean, it is quite a labor of love. And as we both know, we're not making money on it. So anyway, I appreciate your efforts and we've really enjoyed listening to your show over the years. And I have another question for you because this blows my mind. How in the world and where did you come up with the ideas for 128 episodes? I mean, you're talking about you started with 5 or 10 and here you are 128 episodes later. How did you do that? Where did you come up with these ideas?
Man, so much help. So much help. And so came up with a few ideas. As I said, Robert really helped me in with a number of ideas. And he would once or twice a year send me an email with 5 people. Hey, here's 5 people you ought to talk to. And if I can introduce you to any of these people, please do it. In the later years, my current assistant, Claire McGee, she'd just start doing research and say, hey, somebody wrote an interesting article about this. Do you think this might be a good podcast? I said, yeah, that'd be great. Let's reach out to them. And then, you know, I'd listen to y'all's show. Either I'm like, man, that's a great guest. We ought to have them on, or it would spur another idea, or I'd go to a CLE and hear somebody that I thought, man, they've got something interesting to say. And so the ideas came from a lot of different places, but perhaps even more importantly, a lot of different people. And so, man, without that, I wouldn't have gotten past 10 episodes, I'm sure.
Yeah, I don't think we've ever sat down to discuss our respective experiences in what I would call the evolution of our podcast. Yours has been around longer, and you've got a much larger library. But would you say that there was any sort of an evolution to your show? And can you point to any watershed moments where you felt like, I like the direction this has turned right now?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So early on, I thought every episode would largely be me talking. And I would have a guest, but even when I would have a guest, my idea was it was still going to be half of me talking about some legal principle or some case that had just come out. And pretty early on, I was like, man, this is taking so much time. I can't keep doing this. Right. Plus, as I would listen to it, I'm like, you know what? The guest is a lot more interesting than I am talking. And so, I mean, it was early in the life of it where I'm like, yeah, forget about me talking. I'm just going to find the right guest and come up with the right questions. And so that was probably the biggest turning point. And then at some point, and you guys, I think, grabbed a hold of this a lot faster than I did. I mean, I kind of approached it to some extent as a purist, which is, hey, this is going to be about the law and it's going to be very high-minded and whatever else. And people kept telling me, my favorite part of the show is when you do the cross-examination, you ask them, what fashion trend would you bring back or what would you put on a billboard? Yep. And I got to realize, only because I was too dense to realize it sooner, that human element is what people really like and it's what people relate to. And the storytelling that we do is the part that the people most enjoy. And that's what I think drives the podcast movement, not just in what we do, but across the spectrum of different shows, is that's what draws people into it. And I don't know when that happened in the evolution of the show either, but at some point I kind of dropped the, you know, we need to be a purist kind of thing and let's have a lot more fun with it. And that man, that helped me a lot because that helped make it a lot more fun, a lot less dense, and a lot less time consuming.
Well, I got to tell you, believe it or not, one of our watershed moments and watershed episodes was the first time that you made an appearance on Infrastructure Junkies in an episode that we called 50 First Dates with Clint Schumacher.
Yes.
And I don't know what episode number that was, but it was early on. And we had done several episodes where it was us talking or us and another person talking. And we hadn't really found our groove. And the second we finished recording with you and you got off the phone, we looked at each other and we were like, that's it. Like, that's the kind of podcast we want to have. And we've talked about it. It had content. It had personality, it had heart, and it felt genuine, and it felt genuine to what we were trying to put out there. And that was so we owe you a huge debt of gratitude for that particular episode because it really put us in the direction I think we always wanted to be in.
You're nice to say that. I think it was Dave, and I can't remember if he asked me this question while we were recording or when the show was over, but at some point, you asked me a very insightful question, and you said, you know what, all of your favorite movies are generally about some big con or somebody tricking somebody else. And I thought, oh my goodness, that's really true. And then I'm trying to figure out, what does that say about me? And I'm not sure I've answered that question yet, Dave, but you were the first person to ever put their finger on it.
Well, we were actually about to ask you if you'd figure that out yet. So
I haven't. I don't know. I'm sure it's a problem, though.
I don't think so.
I'm going to quote you. That episode we did, 50 First Dates with Clint Schumacher, it's the first time where I felt like we had a visit, that's your word that you use a lot, that where we were visiting with you and we were kind of talking about things and it got fairly personal, but I think that made it so much more compelling. So that was in early season two. That would have been in the spring of 2021. Does that sound right?
Yeah.
And that was just, I thank you so much for coming on and helping pointing us in the right direction, even if you didn't realize what was happening.
It was purely unintentional, but I'm so pleased it has happened. And I'll just tell you guys, I'm super proud of y'all. I am so thankful that y'all started your show, that you've continued your show. I'm thankful that you're going to carry it on. I know if you kind of ask yourself the same questions I do, you continually have to go, okay, is this still worth it? And so far, you keep saying yes. And so I'm enormously proud of you guys and so thankful that you're continuing to carry the torch of the eminent domain and the podcast in that genre and on that subject matter.
Yeah, that really means a lot. And let's talk about that a little bit. Let's talk about our respective platforms, our respective themes, our respective shows, the vibe. We very intentionally, and if I look back on it, I'm not sure I would have done this again, but we very intentionally sort of developed a vibe of irreverence and you don't know what's going to happen next. And the purpose was kind of to make people say, what in the world's going on? You mean right of way can be interesting or fun? And we talked about Billy Squire and we talked about spam. And meanwhile, you were more of a purist, as you say. You were talking about legal concepts with very prestigious guests on your show. Like, what in the world went through your mind when these idiots called Kristen and Dave, and at the time was Ross and Carrie Lynn, showed up on the scene?
I was excited y'all were doing it because I always thought I was talking to a different audience than you were. And I think there's a tremendously important message to be delivered to the people who work on y'all's side of the V. The people that are doing the right-of-way acquisition and the people that are in the trenches for the condemnor side of the equation. And I wasn't really talking to those people, and I never really viewed them as my direct audience, and I wasn't directing my show in that way. But I think that, you know, when I talk to clients, inevitably the clients that are the most difficult to serve well are the ones that had a bad experience at the outset with someone in the right-of-way industry. And I think that the more that you guys are speaking to your audience and bringing them up the learning curve, and really to some extent, just helping them feel the pride in their job that they ought to have, and that so many of them do, because it's critically important work. And I was always so thankful that you guys were speaking to those folks, because I really couldn't with the direction that my show was going.
Well, here, listeners, is a piece of trivia I bet nobody knew. Okay. And I'm not sure you remember this, Clint, but I'm going to bring it up. Is early on, we were very active on socials. And as I said, it had a very irreverent tone to it. And Kristen ran the socials. Anybody who thought it was me, you're wrong. It's Kristen. And we had this boneheaded idea. And we said, let's invite Clint Schumacher into a fake Twitter war, where we would like battle across the Twitters and put each other down.
Pretend like we were just real adversaries in the podcast.
Right. And so I think Kristen approached you with that, Clint, and you're like, yeah, that's not really my brand. I'm going to pass on this one.
And then we're like, maybe we should step up our game a little bit and not be such dirt bags.
That is exactly what happened.
Well, Clint, I have a question for you.
Sure.
Do you have like a favorite or a couple of episodes that you are really, really proud of? Because I want to share with you, we had after the Uri, which froze North Texas beyond recognition and created that massive power grid failure, we had Krista Castaneda on to talk about the Texas power grid failure. And I, to this day, I think that is the episode I'm the most proud of. I was proud of being able to get a guest of her caliber. I was proud to be able to deliver something that was, the content was so very relevant and so very timely. I'm really, really proud of that episode.
Oh, and you know, Clint, you are the one that got her onto our show.
Exactly.
That was the weirdest thing here. Like, she was available to you and you're like, no, Clint's like, I know you guys want to talk to somebody about this. Here's Krista Castaneda. We didn't know who she was.
So again,
Kristen did, but I didn't know.
Yet again, a huge thank you for, I mean, the episode that, one of the episodes that I'm the most proud of, the guest came from you. So thank you for that.
This episode of Infrastructure Junkies is generously sponsored by Blackbird Right-of-Way. If you are looking for compliant, timely, and innovative relocation solutions, this is exactly what Blackbird does. Kristen Short and her team deliver every parcel, every time. Find them at blackbirdrow.com, blackbirdrow.com.
I do want to know if you have an episode or a couple of episodes that you're just really proud of for one reason or another.
Yeah. So, you know, it's kind of like asking which one is your favorite child. It's hard to narrow that down. And I'm so thankful to all the guests that came on. But a couple that maybe jump out, I think the joint episode that we did with Mayor Adler was, you know, just like you talk about your episode with Krista, I felt the same way about that episode with Mayor Adler, particularly when we got to talking about homelessness and some deeper societal issues. And so I thought that was great. I was so thankful that we had a chance to do that together, and he was very gracious with his time. Early on, I did a podcast about the border wall with a reporter from ProPublica, and I'm not going to even remember that person's name, but I thought that was a very timely and relevant episode. I was really thankful for that one. Robert Thomas was on the show, I think, 6 times. And inevitably, we would cover big cases whenever he would come on the show. And those are always the most downloaded episodes. But just in terms of educating, particularly lawyers, on issues that were important, he always delivered. And so those were among my favorites. And then, you know, there were a handful of times. The other thing I kind of got lucky on is during the 6-year run, there were a number of big U.S. Supreme Court cases that came out. And so there was great content, and we had some good law professors who are well-known and well-written and well-spoken come on and talk about those episodes from the Supreme Court. And so those were, I think those were always a lot of fun as well.
Yeah, we were chatting a little bit about why we did this, and let's just be honest. Our motivation behind these podcasts isn't completely altruistic, is it?
It's not. It's not.
So has the Eminent Domain podcast accomplished anything for you in particular in a professional sense?
Yes, totally. 100%, but not what I was expecting.
Yes.
Yes.
Agreed.
Yeah. I mean, when I decided to do it, it was largely for marketing purposes, and it was to be a different differentiating point. And part of it was, if I'm competing for work against other people, my thought was, this is something that makes me different, but also it's a way to build a relationship with a client without me having to sit in front of them. There's hours and hours of episodes of me talking to about eminent domain issues that they can listen to and have some degree of comfort level with me and leverage my time by doing that. That happened a little bit, not all that much, but a little. What I found was the biggest benefit to me personally was the relationships that I made with people and the conversations I had with people that I would have never, ever, ever, ever had. And I'm sure the same thing, you experience the same thing. It forces you to go out and meet people that you would have no other reason to go and meet. And I'm continually amazed that when I call someone who I may barely know, I may not know at all, at some other part of the country and say, hey, would you come on and talk about XYZ in the podcast? How often they say yes. The overwhelming majority of the time they say yes. And we have our conversation. We have our visit, as you probably correctly quote me as saying, and I've made a friend and, and I've made a contact that if I have something else in the future, I can call that person up and pick their brain about it. And I've done that. And it's, you know, it's former judges, it's law professors, it's people that practice in states all across the country and in Canada. And that by far has been the biggest blessing of the podcast.
I could not agree with you more. And if I were explaining what I thought would come of this podcast and what did, it would be almost identical to what you just said. And we were just talking about the other day, we know people all over the country now, because when you have a recording with someone and you sit down with them for an hour and a half or whatever, you really kind of get to know each other. It's personal. And we're friends with, you know, a winemaker. We're friends with a history professor, a mayor, an Indian property rights specialist. I mean, you name it. And now these people are not just friends to the show. They're people that we know and we've interacted with and that we've learned so much from. But that's been, that just blows my mind how many wonderful connections we've made because of this podcast.
Yeah. And you know, Clint, I don't think anybody has ever called me up and said, hey, I heard your podcast. I'd like to hire you for a case. Like that's never happened for me, maybe on the landowner side, but not for me. But these connections we've made, and I know people have gotten to know us and gotten to know Kristen, and these relationships are invaluable, even with you. You know, even just, I know another eminent domain attorney through you, and then the people I've met through you, and that was just one guest. Anyway, I could not agree more. It took a path I never envisioned.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we talked a lot about also one of the things we talked about when we were starting our podcast is wanting to have for our industry and in particular, our side of things to have a voice. We didn't feel like there was a community or a voice for what we do. And it's been more of a community building thing for us than I think we ever envisioned at the beginning.
Let me pose the same question to you, except in a personal context.
Okay.
So I think we've benefited professionally. How about personally?
That's a really insightful question. You know, the podcast has caused me to be self-reflective in a lot of ways that has been very beneficial. I very intentionally tried not to be too self-revealing in many episodes, but occasionally I would. And when we would announce the podcast with an email, almost always included a book recommendation or some type of recommendation with it as well. And that exercise, I think, caused a lot of personal growth. And as you guys know, anytime you get behind the microphone, you have to get yourself to a level to, you know, I'm going to say perform, that's maybe not the right verb, but to be able to make a presentation that's worthwhile to listen to, that you've got to ramp up to it emotionally. And there's been a lot of growth from that. So I have definitely experienced that. And here again, I had no idea that was going to happen going into it, or that you would have these moments of self-reflection. Or quite candidly, you know, as things would come up, and I'll share this, there's been a lot of times in our history in the use of eminent domain where we have not treated marginalized communities very well. Mm-hmm. And I was blind to that. Maybe not completely blind to it, but certainly not sufficiently cognizant of it. And during the course of the podcast, that issue came up enough that it forced me to grapple with it and have people on the show that talked about it. And I think we hear more about that now generally industry-wide than we did when I was certainly a young lawyer or I was coming up in the industry. And I have had to personally grapple with that. And I could probably name several other topics that fall into that same category where I've had to experience some personal growth to be able to be a host on that topic. So there's a lot of good that comes from that.
Let's talk about the challenges of creating a podcast
on a
month-to-month basis. What were your challenges in keeping this going for so long?
Time is always one, right? So The time that you spend doing this is time that's away from something else. And sometimes it was time away from my practice, which is making it go slower than it would. Sometimes it was time away from my family or certainly away from a hobby at times. I'm in on Saturday doing the podcast instead of hanging out with the family or doing something else that might be more, let's say, enjoyable. Not that I always enjoy doing the podcast, but a more enjoyable hobby. So there's that cost. Beyond that, I do think there was always an emotional toil to it. I don't like to be self-revealing, which is weird for somebody that wrote a book probably to say, but at the end of the day, that doesn't give me energy. That takes energy away from me. And so to do that, in the podcast was always a challenge. And at some point that starts to take a toll on you too. So I don't know, those are probably the biggest costs. Does that answer your question?
It does. And that's really, it's a great answer. And I can tell you, when we finish a podcast, we usually high five and go, man, that was awesome. And then we have to go sit on the couch for a minute or something. It's like,
true.
It's like doing a presentation in front of a bunch of people and you need, I need to sit down for a second. That was a lot.
Well, and I mean, y'all may know this. I mean, it's brutal to go back and listen to yourself. And so, that probably has helped presentation in other ways, but man, that's tough. You go back and you go, I didn't know I said home that many times. Right.
If I say fascinating one more time in my life, somebody smack me. I say fascinating 17 times an episode. I can't stand it.
Oh, you definitely learn your personal and Kristen will tell you how many times we've recorded an episode. And when we started out, Clint, I did the editing. We didn't send it to a producer like we do now. I did the editing. And I would go through a pass at editing and I'd call Kristen. I'd be like, that podcast stunk. That was the worst we've ever done. Nobody's going to listen to it. It was terrible. I don't think we should publish
it. It's a real stinker. And then I'd listen and go, I think you just had to listen to it too many times to edit it. It sounds great.
So, Clint, there are two things that they say. You know how they say, that's what they say. Okay. There are two things that they say are key to a successful podcast. And that's content and consistency. Just keep pushing it out. And your audience has got to be able to rely on you. And your content has to be compelling in some regard. And I'll tell you, I think that you nailed both. And how did you do that?
You're very kind to say that. Thank you. Because at times I felt like I was falling short. For the content, it really covers all the things we've kind of talked about. I just had so many people, a village of people that were helping with ideas. And of course, we became very guest-driven. And so I was highly reliant on somebody coming on and being a great guest. And then we had so many times where that happened. In terms of the consistency, I probably like you guys have, you start to figure out ways to leverage your time. And just like you were saying, Dave, I mean, initially I edited all the podcasts. Golly, that took forever. And so we found a great podcast editor who took that burden off my plate. My assistant, Claire, learned how to do it, was able to take a lot of the tasks off my plate to the point of drafting questions and lining up the guests. And she really was able to narrow the amount of time I was having to spend on everything. And so as the various pieces got into place of people that could help and leverage the time, it got a lot smoother. And the other thing was, she was driving the boat and I'd say, look, we want to release two episodes a month. You get two interviews on my calendar and don't let me cancel them. And so just because she was a taskmaster, we were able to keep it going over the last couple of years.
Good job, Claire.
Yeah, way to exactly. Go, Claire. No doubt.
And note to our producer, Cody, you heard what he said. We've got a backup. Just kidding, Cody.
Just kidding. Well, here's a thought. Do you feel like at this point, now that you've wrapped up the Eminent Domain podcast, do you feel like you accomplished what you set out to do with that show? Did it meet your objectives?
It didn't meet my objectives, Kristen, but that's totally okay, because what it delivered instead was so much better than what my objectives were. And just like Dave said, I mean, the number of people that called and hired me because of the podcast, I could probably count on one hand and not need all my fingers to do it. All the other things it delivered, which we talked about, the relationships with other people, the conversations that we had, the amount of learning that I did, both professionally and personally, that was by far way more beneficial than what my initial objective was. And so I'll have to say I failed on my initial objective, but succeeded on so many things I wasn't wise enough to know would have been realistic objectives when I started.
So, Clint, every one of your shows that I'm aware of, you have cross-examination with your guest.
Yes, yes.
How about if I cross-examine you?
Oh, let's do it.
All right. Oh, ladies and gentlemen, you know what that music means. It's time for cross-examination with Dave.
Are you sure? You can still back out.
Let's do it. It's only fair and right.
Okay.
I can't wait to hear this.
Okay. I know you don't like to be self-revealing, but it's my show now.
Oh, there you go.
What must you, Clint Schumacher, still accomplish to make your life a success?
Wow.
Coming out strong there, Dave.
You know, let me just start the answer by saying I am embarrassingly blessed. And so I really have to start there. But some number of years ago, really at the urging of a very wise friend, I came up with some core values. And I've got five. One is to be a disciple. Two is to be a great spouse. Three is to be a great parent. Four is to make the world around me a better place. And five is to be better today than I was yesterday. And for me to measure success is if I can keep getting better in those five categories, I'll never achieve it. I'll never be perfect. But if I can keep getting better in those five categories, then I'll count that as successful.
I think that's a great answer.
That's a great answer. Gave me chills.
Okay. This is equally as deep and probably a little bit more difficult to answer, and take your time. Do you prefer to eat Spam cold or fried?
Man, that one.
Another tough one.
That's the easiest question. So I grew up in a household that would have fried Spam. My mom made it all the time. And to me, that's the only way to eat it. Like, I didn't know there was another option, to be honest with you. And so if you're going to eat Spam, you got to fry it.
Okay.
He was raised right.
Well, there's no wrong answer
to that.
There's
no wrong answer. The fact that he was eating Spam tells me he was raised right.
That was the right answer.
That's right.
I've been eating Spam. All right, Clint, next question, serious question, and I'm really interested to hear your answer to this. And this doesn't, I'm not just talking about the law or family or anything like that, but what keeps you awake at night? What is your greatest concern?
You know, you said not to answer family. So, I mean, I worry about my kids. So that's one, but I'll give you something different than that. I mean, one of the most chilling thoughts that I heard somebody say one time is that the definition of hell is on your deathbed, the person that you could have been showing up and you seeing who that could have been. And to me, the thing that keeps me up at night is trying to answer the question of, okay, Lord, what do you have for me next? And am I equipped to go and do that? And I just don't want to ever miss one of those opportunities. And I'm trying to get better as I get older at being insightful enough to be thoughtful about that question. And to the extent I'm not up worried about kids, then that's the one that I stay up thinking about.
Well, that's another very, very good answer and very heartfelt. So we'll follow it with a very easy question.
Oh, okay, good, good.
Which is, who is a better podcast host, me or Kristen?
Well,
get serious.
Yeah, I mean, it's Kristen's alter ego, which disappeared, I guess, at some point along the way. But that was, you know,
You talking about Tish?
Tish is on a, she's on a extended leave. She'll be back, I'm sure.
Last question, and then you're off the hook on this cross-examination.
All right.
If you could go back to the beginning of the Eminent Domain podcast, the very, very beginning, and do just one thing differently, what would it be?
I've never thought about that. But in talking to you during the course of this interview, and I guess it was Kristen's question to ask, what was the turning point? You know, when I decided to take it less seriously and have a lot more fun, that was really helpful to me. And I think it probably really made for better shows. And I wish I had had that insight earlier from episode one. It probably would have been a better product from the very beginning.
That's funny. I would give the exact opposite answer. I would have taken it more seriously in the first 10 episodes and then tightened up a little bit earlier in the show.
Right.
Well, Clint, we're about out of time. Do you have any final thoughts or any message, any farewell message to our listeners?
Oh, man, you're nice to give me that platform. Man, I would just repeat what I told you guys, which is I'm so proud of y'all and thankful for what you're doing and just give you my encouragement. I'm going to be on the sideline cheering you on and continuing to listen to the content that y'all put out. I'm so thankful that you're speaking to the audience that you're speaking to. And if I can ever be of help to you, please let me know. I'd be happy to do it. I'm so grateful that anyone ever listened to 128 episodes of our show. They'll still be out there for the time being. We'll keep them out on the website. And of course, they're out on all the podcast aggregators, so folks can still get access to them. But other than that, man, I'm cheering y'all from the sideline. Keep going.
Thank you, Clint. And when you are really missing talking into a microphone, you always have a place on our show, and we will welcome you back on anytime. And thank you for setting the bar so very high for all of us. And I would like to finish with something. I never heard you answer this question on your own show, even though I heard you ask it dozens of times. And that is, what would you put on a billboard?
I think I would put two words, which would be intentional. I think that I certainly suffered from this, and I think a lot of people do. You just kind of float through life without ever really thinking about it. And I think when we begin to be intentional about designing the kind of lives that we want and the kind of experiences that we want, that there's just an incredible magic in that. And if I had the gift of somebody giving me a platform to put two words on a billboard, I think that's what it would be.
Great answer.
I love it. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you've enjoyed this time with Clint Schumacher. Check out the 128 fabulous episodes of the Eminent Domain podcast. And thank you, Clint Schumacher.
Thanks, Clint.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.